Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
And now for something completely different, as they used to say, while we are resurrecting all our 1970s references, New York's wildlife is usually used as a joke to refer to the city's party animals, not the flora and fauna that we think belong in the country. Well, if coyote sightings and hawk families haven't convinced you otherwise, in New York Magazine this week, Robert Sullivan writes about the fact the city is teeming with biodiversity. There was even a survey that found more bird species in Jamaica Bay than in Yellowstone and Yosemite parks combined. Robert Sullivan has written about rats, the Meadowlands, and most recently, the Thoreau You Don't Know, What the Prophet of Environmentalism Really Meant, and he joins us now. Welcome back to the show, Robert Sullivan.
Thank you very much for having me.
So talk a little bit about the breadth of wildlife. We've heard about coyotes, hawks. What other surprises are there out there?
I think the big surprise is about the vastness of what's here. So everybody thinks that, you know, nature packed up and left New York City a long time ago. And, you know, the other side of that is that we encouraged it to leave. You know, we pretty much paved over everything. And it's true that we paved over a lot of stuff. But, you know, we still have pretty much all our historic fish stocks. We still have forests. We accidentally have forests that when the parks were set up in the late 1800s, early 1900s, we set up these things we called parks, and what do you know? They went back in the 80s, sort of the end of the 80s, and looked at Parks Department's maps, and a group called the Natural Resources Group looked at these sort of green spaces, and people said, well, they're not parking lots, and they're not baseball fields. What are they? And guess what? They're forests. And guess what? They're some of the oldest forests, you know, on the East Coast.
So what are we talking about here? Yeah. We're not talking about forests in the parks that we know.
Oh, no, yeah. We're talking about forests in the park. We know. We're talking about Alley Pond Park, which is 600 acres of forest.
Pond Park, I found out about for the first time in your article.
You have not
Central
been
Central Park, Prospect Park.
Yeah.
Are we talking about those places? Are we talking about places like Alley Pond?
We're talking about Alley Pond. We're talking about Pelham Bay Park. No, they're not vacant plots. They're huge, you know, hundreds of acres of parks each worth of kind of accidentally left alone forests. So we have two kinds of, in a way, we have kind of two kinds of nature in the city. We have the left alone forests, for instance. And there are other kinds of examples of left aloneness.
Okay, so these are in, just to be clear, these are in actual parks. We're not talking about abandoned pieces of land.
No, we're talking about giant parks that we hardly ever go to unless we live right next door to them, which is like Pelham Bay Park in the Bronx or Alley Pond Park. And then there's old stands of trees in Inwood Park, up in the top of Manhattan. But the big point is that because we blocked these off, you know, a long time ago, they've been kind of left alone. Everybody thinks, oh, wow, well, you know, I need to get and see old stands out in New Hampshire or Vermont. But guess what? They cut down those trees in New Hampshire and Vermont a long time ago, and they didn't cut down, and they've grown back. I mean, you know, this is another big secret is that the forests have been cut down twice in all of New England and the Northeast. But anyway, in New York, we've accidentally left these alone, and there's all this nature that we'd sort of forgotten about and beat up and then created a new kinds of nature. But the big thing is that you take a typical forest or an area in Alley Pond Park and you compare that with, as some scientists did a few years ago, with a stand of forests in Connecticut, in rural Connecticut. And guess which forest retains more carbon, kind of sucks up more carbon? Guess which soil will kind of take all the bad things out for us? It's kind of amazing.
Why?
Why? Which why? Oh, there's so many whys.
Why are the New York forests so much better, more diverse, and, you know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere?
Well, I think that Frank Sinatra strikes again. So that's the 70s? Was that in the 70s, that song? I can't remember. So anyway.
I think it was earlier.
I'm trying to stay with the references.
Maybe.
Okay, so, well, you know, it's easy to say. I think the big thing is that, you know, we left stuff alone. We also mixed stuff up. when they built the Verrazano Bridge, they took a whole bunch of sand and they put it on top of some ponds. And you would say, oh, well, they killed that wildlife off, or that's a dead area now. But guess what? They accidentally created a coastal grassland. And now we have suites of state endangered birds that have showed up in these quasi natural touched places, you know, places that you would think are, you'd say they're not pristine. But because they're not pristine, we've got these new things happening. So why? Oh, there's so many whys. But why did this happen? One, because we left it alone. And we ended up, when we checked this out in the early 80s, and started mapping these lands, we ended up realizing we have 10 central parks worth of kind of accidental nature conservancy lands.
But when you say accidental,
yeah.
Why do you say accidental? I mean, these were areas that were mapped as parks, yes, no?
They were mapped as parks.
But then what, never used?
Well, they were mapped as parks land, and everybody said in the 60s, well, let's try to build parks on those someday. We'll put ball fields on, we'll do whatever. But they weren't necessarily, people didn't say, let's make those forests and they can be kind of the civic lungs of our city.
By the way, an historical note from our producer, New York was written for Martin Scorsese's 1977 film.
Thank you very much.
You were right, I was wrong.
Thanks so much.
Called New York, New York. Sinatra recorded it in 1980. I guess it's just because I've been hearing it so long, I thought it was from the 1950s. But nope, you were right,
well,
1970s.
I was, you know.
So we were back to the conversation about this. So they were mapped as parklands,
yeah.
But they weren't sort of fully exploited as places to
Right, they were yet to be fully
and...
exploited. That's exactly right. And so so that's one why. One why is this kind of nature has been rediscovered. The big why, though, is that we're on an estuary. And if you look at the biggest cities in the world, you know, out of the 20 biggest cities, 18 are built on estuaries. So the estuary in New York is all about salt marsh. It's all about Spartina grass. It's all about those old Hudson River School paintings where you see the fields and you see those giant balls of salt hay piled up from here to Connecticut, from down to you know, South Jersey, salt marsh. So that land, salt marsh estuary, is so productive in terms of making biomass and making and feeding creatures. And that productive land feeds and grows and nourishes so much in terms of wildlife and fish, and the chain begins and it flushes up into the rivers in the Catskills and the Adirondacks. And now if the Parks Department goes and plants herring, as it's doing, this National Resources Group, which is an amazing sort of little guerrilla outfit in the Parks Department, if they go and plant a herring and try to get herring to come back, we're no longer just talking
herring,
about herring.
Fish.
That's right, alewife.
Uh-huh.
That we're no longer talking about just kind of feeding, so I can catch a herring if I go out with a net in the Bronx River. Where, oh my God,
still couldn't eat it though, right?
Well, guess what? Yeah, I mean, well, I'm not going to go and eat it right now. But the big thing is not whether I can eat the herring. The big thing is that 50% of the fish that live from here to Nova Scotia eat herring.
So is this a good thing that herring are growing in the Bronx River and all the fisheries up and down the east coast of the United States and Canada are eating them?
So this is an amazing thing. This is a really incredible thing, and it's sort of like the second chance that we never would have known we had. And we still don't quite get it because we say, oh, the city, blah, blah, blah. But this estuary is so strong and so vibrant, and yeah, we've knocked it down and we've hit it really hard. But it turns out that we didn't kill it. And we've been ignoring it because we say, got to get up to the country house. Love that nature. That's the real nature. But relatively speaking, there are fewer species and there's less ecological diversity. There's diversity, but not as much as we have because this estuary produces so much junk.
So is this a – I mean, what about other cities on water? Boston, Chicago. I mean, are they as well off as New
York? Guess what? They're all built on big estuaries. Now, I'm not going to get into is our – you know, estuarine nature better than Boston? No. And I'm not also going to...
I mean, is this known? Has Boston been equally studied as New York?
That's a whole show. I mean, you know, that's maybe several shows. Which city has better urban
series.
Nature?
Uh-huh.
But the point is that I think that if you kind of embrace this urban nature and realize that the coyotes aren't coming necessarily from Westchester. The coyotes are maybe going to Westchester from the city because the coyotes live in the city.
They will thank us in Westchester.
They are already living here. But we and so the city's been relatively calm as opposed to the suburbs. Suburbs, they're out there shooting coyotes under trampolines and things like this. So I don't think there have been a lot of guns pulled out to shoot so far, you know, knock on wood, a lot of animals in New York City. But the big point is that urban nature has been rediscovered. And that now as we're going in to do things and saying, hey, what if we put in Alewife? You know, I was out in the Bronx River a couple of weeks ago, and somebody said, I think I saw a mussel in the Bronx River. And another scientist followed that up. And guess what? There are freshwater mussels in the Bronx River. You never would have guessed that. You never would have thought that. So if we can embrace this, then it feeds the other nature in the country, too.
Let's talk about that in 1 second. Let's read a couple of comments on our chat page. Caitlin comments, I'm always impressed with the diversity of flora and fauna around here. Just had a skunk sighting and unfortunately smelling last night in downtown Jersey City. Any word lately on the coyotes of Columbia, meaning Columbia University?
Oh, the coyotes of Columbia. Well, I have no word on them. I know that they sort of track one down from Westchester into Central Park, and they thought that maybe the guards had seen it in Columbia and that kind of thing. But I think what the coyote speaks to is corridors. And the coyote's trying to find a corridor using Amtrak tracks or maybe guards who are looking left when he goes right or she goes right.
Meaning a high-speed rail, huh?
High-speed rail, whatever. But again, suddenly, if you start thinking about this city as a place teeming with stuff and not just giant, what they call megafauna, charismatic megafauna. That's what a coyote is. And of course, I hope to be someday. But a charismatic megafauna, i.e., people kind of can relate to that. But really, what I would so love it if people woke up in the morning and went down to the river and looked for a place that wasn't completely dredged out and said, oh my gosh, look, there's some salt marsh. There's some gross smelling stuff that's low tide. And there are tiny anthropods, you know, tiny creatures growing there that are going to feed more. It's just so. It multiplies. So when you think about coyotes making their way down or back or wherever, then green roofs don't become sort of a thing about, you know, I really like this kind of lettuce and, you know, I love food and all that. Green roofs suddenly become a corridor for bee traffic and pollen and insects and maidenflies. And suddenly, you know, when you think about the parking lot or next to
a flora and fauna superhighway, so to speak.
That's exactly right. And then you're also thinking about if you're thinking that urban nature is important and not a secondary or degraded nature, then you're thinking, wow, maybe I really shouldn't be pouring things
that.
In the streets.
Just want to let everybody know that this is Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. My guest is Robert Sullivan. He has an article in this week's New York Magazine about New York's wildlife diversity. There is something incredibly sort of disruptive underlying your article because, of course, basically the notion of the city is the not nature. And the city as the not nature has given rise to a whole bunch of things, including the suburbs, right? You have to get out to the suburbs to get your somewhere that's green,
right?
As was written in The Little Shop of Horrors,
right?
Decade for that.
Right.
But that notion of, you know, you need to get your green outside of the city, and the city is a place where nature is essentially tamed,
right?
Is basically kind of thrown out in your article.
I kind of didn't realize it to the last couple of years, but I've been working most of my life to kind of get rid of that divide between this is nature and that's not nature. And I wish I'd studied Greek and Latin. I'm pushing my kids to study Greek and Latin word roots. But I mean, I think nature comes from the root is about being born, and you're born into it. And the environment, I think the words come from to see around you. So it's kind of where you are.
Right.
Nature is that great other. It's that undefined thing that is the other. And thus we lay down pure and pristine in there.
So there's a suggestion that the sort of disruptiveness of the city, the pavement, the oil spills, are almost good for nature.
That's,
so what are you saying? Rachel Carson was wrong?
Yeah. No, not at all. In fact, Rachel Carson in a way becomes more right. You know, because Rachel Carson is saying chemicals are everywhere and we can't just make things and not care about it. But we don't get – because we had the city as a place that was whatever, it's gone, it's dead, forget it, then we were able to say – and that's why I use this plastic here and I don't ever – but I
I don't do anything bad in this place over here. So we separate things when in fact it's all one thing. Now that's problematic,
yeah,
and I can get into lots of things. Yeah, and there's lots of yeah
buts. So you're
saying
that the diversity isn't because of there's all the sort of oil spills and chemicals and gunk.
I'm not saying that diversity comes because you abuse a place and that we should all go out now and just get as much oil as we can and dump it in the Meadowlands. I'm saying, in fact, that this place that was dumped on, that disruption that people said, oh, I'm never going to live there, that stepping back allowed for something to happen. So this agitation that happens in the city, this disruption that happens in the city, man is not out of the picture. I mean, it applies to the country as well because I've also written about the Harvard Forest has this amazing plan, and basically it's trying to keep people in the woods and bring back forestry, local forestry, rather than doing all the forestry overseas, keeping people in the woods rather than just selling a forest off and making it into a Costco. You'd want to have people living on the land doing, some kind of smart forestry. But the idea is that humans are here. You're not going to get rid of them. And that the NRG, this group in the Parks Department, is working on 200 more acres of creating 200 more acres of this kind of salt marsh.
We need to end it here.
Oh, sure. I know. You should
fascinating conversation. Robert Sullivan's article is in this week's New York Magazine. And can you find where you could go for like your urban nature hike?
Well, you should go up and look for those endangered moths up in Pelham
All
Bay
right.
Park and not touch them.
You'll check the article for clues and get back to us. When we come back, we're going to continue the informal, unscientific, thoroughly unofficial New York primary day exit poll with your calls on congressional and state legislative races. Did you vote for your state legislator? Did you vote against your state legislator? Why? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. We'll also talk to one more designer about the new New York State ballots. All of that and your calls after this.